Ladies and gentlemen, he's the original lead singer of the Diamonds, and he's the man you came to see, Diamond Dave Somerville.
Are you ready to ride? Well, by the fall of 1957, the Diamonds were 8 hits deep, but in truth, we were still 4 blue-eyed, semi-virgin white guys from Toronto in brown 3-button suits. All that was about to change. We were asked to join the first major rock and roll touring show, the fall edition of Irvin Feld's Biggest Show of Stars. As I ascended the steps of the old bus, I noticed the icon sitting directly behind the bus driver. It was that guy known as Chuck Berry, one of the cornerstones of rock and roll. Well, let him drive, absolutely. No, Carl Vesterdahl was the driver, actually. Chuck used to take my acoustic guitar from time to time during the 60 days to follow that we were part of the tour, and he would scotch tape the bus driver's microphone in the on position. He would stick it inside the guitar to make it louder, and we would have some sing-alongs that were as good as some of the shows.
Just give me some of that rock and roll music, any old way you choose it. Got a backbeat, you can't lose it, any old way you choose it. To be rock and roll music, if you wanna dance with me, let me rock and roll dancing, Philadelphia, PA, deep in the heart of Texas, right down to Frisco Bay, right over St. Louis, right down to New Orleans, all the cats gonna dance with me, Elizabeth.
I've just been dancing around the studio. I'm trying to now sit down here and get ready to introduce my guest of honor on the phone. I am pleased to present the lead singer of one of the most popular singing groups of the late 50s and early 60s, Mr. Dave Somerville. Shall I call you Dave or David?
Whatever you like. I get both.
Okay. Well, I'll call you Dave because it'll take less time.
Okay, fine. It's a syllable less. It's a delight to be with you, Ronnie. Thanks very much for calling.
It's my pleasure, and you are tonight in Branson, Missouri?
It's true, yeah, at the Dick Clark's American Bandstand Theater.
Speaking of Bandstand, which was mentioned, of course, on that Chuck Berry song.
Yeah.
Sweet Little 16.
Correct.
We are going to celebrate your singing group. You made a lot of noise with many different recordings. We're going to hear many of the top 40 hits you had. You know how many top 40 hits you had in Billboard? Did anybody?
I think we had 15.
You're right.
Yeah.
Somebody told you I was going to ask that? I don't know.
No. I just happened to know that.
Okay. 15 top 40 hits, and you had a few others that didn't make top 40 maybe in Billboard, but made them in Cashbox, and you
right.
had others that made the Hot 100. And it was a period of time. Actually, it was basically 1956 through 1961.
That's correct.
Your heyday was like 5 years, but what a heyday it was.
We had a marvelous time. We were actually, according to Billboard, the 14th biggest act in that period in time, which is nice. You know, I mean, that included Pat Boone and Elvis Presley and Pat Cole and Frank Sinatra, etc.
We're not going to go through all 13, by the way, because
no.
we want to focus on the Diamonds. You are from Canada.
Yes.
And you grew up in a small town of Rockwood, Ontario, Canada. Is that correct?
Boy, you've been doing your homework. Village of 250 people, and 70 of us were relatives, and a lot of those folks have been to China as missionaries, and my mother was born in Sichuan province in China. We moved to Toronto when I was in grade 8 and went to high school at Central Tech in Toronto, and then I worked for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation for about 2.5 years.
You actually were originally going to become an architect.
Yes, that's what I wanted to do.
But because of your musical background and your interest, you realize that architecture might not be the chosen field for yourself.
Well, you know, I get sucked into singing partly because I loved it. But otherwise, I'm still interested in architecture. Fascinating subject. I still love to build. I have a house in the Hollywood Hills in California. I work on it all the time.
Now, you took a job as a radio operator at the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, which is also known as the CBC.
That's right.
A group came in to audition for a show.
Now's your chance.
And it was a local talent show. You noticed these four guys practicing in the hallway. They were going to be auditioning or something, or they were going to
They were. And I just said that I had been in a quartet, you know, with two black fellows in high school, and I loved quartet singing. We loved the Golden Gate Quartet, but they didn't want to sing professionally. And that was one of the reasons that I studied radio and went to work at the CBC, but I still wanted to be part of a quartet. because my grandfather and his brother had a quartet in China in the 20s with two of their sons. So it was always a dream of mine. So when I saw these guys lined up for the audition, I said, are you guys a quartet? And I said, yes. And I said, how many songs do you have? And they said, three, a cappella. And I said, do you have a name? And they said, no, we don't. I said, well, I know four parts to a whole bunch of tunes. Let me listen to you here in Studio G. And they came up and sang for me. It was wonderful, so I became their coach. And after a couple of months of rehearsal, we were invited to sing at St. Thomas Aquinas Church for a minstrel show, Christmas 1953. And the guy who was singing lead, the melody singer at that time, couldn't make it. He had an exam the next day, so I said, well, I'll just step in for you. And we got such a marvelous response singing three songs a cappella that we went to a restaurant afterwards and were all excited about the possibility of singing professionally. So we called that guy at home, the guy who couldn't make it. He said, no, I don't want to be a professional singer. I want to be a
lawyer.
Well, he ended up being a lawyer. He was also an electrical engineer.
Okay.
So that's how I got into the Diamonds. I was happy to take his place, and then we began to rehearse for about a year and a half, emulating our favorite groups until finally, feeling footloose and fancy free, the four of us, feather-brained young fellows, frittered our father's farthings and wandered far afield in a Ford Fairlane to fuel our fantasies on first 1955 by winning Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scout.
Were you the Diamonds when you appeared on the Godfrey Show?
Oh, yes. I think we were the Four Diamonds, actually. And that and then some other work led directly to a disc jockey in Cleveland named Dr. Bill Randall, who liked the way we sang. He had discovered Dizzy Gillespie and the Crew Cuts and the Everly Brothers, and he liked the way we sang, and he sent us off to Mercury Records in Chicago, where we auditioned for them and for Dot Records. Mercury signed us, and that was the beginning of our career with them.
You also were on Coral Records briefly?
Yes, we had done that before we met Dr. Randall.
Okay, and you did a version of Black Denim Trousers?
We did, and we got some play on that in Canada, but we really didn't have any hits.
So Dr. Randall, I didn't know he was a doctor. I know he was a disc jockey.
Bill Randall had 7 degrees.
Wow.
Maybe one of the, you know, an uncle of mine is a Rhodes Scholar, and I have, I think, 7 or 8 lawyers in my family. Dr. Bill's the smartest guy I think I ever met. Certainly the most interesting, absolutely fascinating man. He ended up as a lawyer and a disc jockey during his last days. He worked for the government for a while. Marvelous person and fascinating.
He helped you get the deal with Mercury Records.
Yes, he did.
Your first recording for Mercury was Why Do Fools Fall in Love? And the actual writers of that song were Frankie Lyman,
yes,
as well as Herman Santiago and Jimmy Merchant.
Yes.
They were members of a group called The Teenagers, and they were on G Records. At the time you recorded Why Do Fools Fall in Love, had their version already been out?
Yes, it had. It hadn't been out long, but it was seen as being an important song, and Bill Randall chose it for us to sing. Matter of fact, Bill Randall picked both sides of our first four releases. He was right there at the edge of rock and roll when Alan Freed and Bill Randall were the number one DJs in Cleveland.
We're going to listen to that very first record right now. This was the start of the Diamonds' successful career. These are the Diamonds with Dave Somerville doing the lead singing on Why Do Fools Fall in Love.
Oh.
Why Do Fools Fall in Love? That was a cover of the Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers version. Your version, I believe, got to number 12 in Billboard.
Yes.
And I think their version got to number 6. So actually, on the chart, the versions were pretty close in terms of peak position.
Yeah, they were.
Some stations played both of them.
Yes, they did. Well, you know, a lot of white-owned stations were not playing black music at that time. So actually, we probably got more exposure for the song than it might have otherwise.
And that means more money, of course, for the writers of the song.
Three
of whom happened to be members of the Teenagers.
Yes.
Your next top 40 hit was a version of a song originally done by a group called the Willows.
Yes.
I forget where the Willows were from. It was a black group.
I think they were from New York.
And their version of the song was called Church Bells May Ring. When your version came out, I believe it was The Church Bells May Ring.
That was probably a typo. And when we recorded that in Chicago at Universal Studios with Bill Putnam, the famous engineer at the wheel, I took a demo of it, a dub, as they used to say, of it immediately to the airport where I just waited for the next plane to Cleveland. And I got on that, flew to Cleveland from Chicago, went directly to Bill Randall's house, his apartment actually, and delivered it to him, and then went right back to the airport and got a plane back to Chicago.
Like the chimes in your record.
I wish I could remember the chimes player, but he did a marvelous job.
Both versions of that song, they sounded a little bit different. The chimes sounded a little bit different, and both had, you know, different elements. You didn't just copy their recording.
Yes, absolutely.
I am Ronnie Allen, and I am pleased to be talking to a real gem of a guy.
I like that.
These days he's known as Diamond Dave Somerville.
Try to keep the sparkle in it.
Yes, and if you're Googling Somerville, it's 1 M. We're going to play Ka-Ding Dong, and like all of these records, you had competition. Your competition on Ka-Ding Dong was the G-Clefs, I believe. Is that correct?
That's right.
Your version did quite well. Got to number 35 on the chart. Anything you could tell me about Ka-Ding Dong?
At this point, of course, we were beginning to be viewed as a cover group, and we weren't aware of that. I remember a disc jockey named Barry Kay first saying to us on the air, "How do you feel about being a cover group?" I really didn't even know what he meant by it. We were just looking for good material, and as it turns out, actually, we uncovered a lot of great music, which, as I said earlier, was not necessarily being exposed. on white radio, possibly on black radio, but we just saw it as good material, and I think through the years, I think I've had only one or two negative comments from either acts that we so-called covered, or publishers, or songwriters. Everybody got paid, of course.
Now, actually, if you want a story about Ka Ding Dong, I can just make one up right now. I could say, well, you did so well with The Church Bells May Ring, and you want to do another song about a... about bells ringing, so
that's right.
What better song than Ka Ding Dong? There you go, your next 10 interviews that you could use that story, and you don't even have to credit me.
Quite a coincidence, I never thought of that.
Yeah. We're going to listen to it right now. These are The Diamonds and Ka Ding Dong. Another bell ringer by the Diamonds, Ka Ding Dong. I didn't ask you, how did you get the name, the Diamonds?
Well, we were on our way to that first job, that minstrel show, Christmas 1953, when we realized, as we were driving, that we had no name to give to whoever was going to introduce us. So we started talking about that as we drove, and Ted Kowalski, sitting in the back seat, I think I was driving, he was right behind me, he said, well, why don't we call ourselves the Four Diamonds? And everybody went, okay, it was just that simple.
I want to point out before we go to Little Darlin' that what you heard at the very beginning of the show is from a CD, and it's called On the 1957. So I'm trying to figure out what the name of this CD is. I guess
it's On the 1957 Rock and Roll Greyhound Bus.
Oh, okay.
That's
a long title. With Diamond Dave Somerville, who is pretending to bribe a dust, folks. Bribe a dust. I bust a drive, you know. Ralph Cramden. He's doing his Ralph Cramden bit. On the Show of Stars bus. Was there actually a Show of Stars bus like that?
Oh, yes, absolutely. If you open the artwork in that CD, you'll see that there's a poster that includes pictures and artwork related to all the dozen pioneer jukebox giants who were on that trip, who included Fats Domino, Chuck Berry, Laverne Baker, The Drifters, Clyde McFatter, Bill Anka, Frankie Lyman, Buddy Knox, Jimmy Bowen, Eddie Cochran, Buddy Holly and the Crickets, the Everly Brothers, and the Diamonds, and of course the queen of our bus, Little Richard. No, I'm just kidding. he wasn't on the bus. We worked with him a few times later, but all those other folks sat on that same bus.
I want to know, is Richard going to sue you or is he going to sue me? I didn't say it. And we are talking about the biggest legendary recording acts.
This was rock and roll's first major touring show.
One thing that's interesting to me is Frankie Lyman was on the show along with the Diamonds. I would assume that Frankie probably did Why Do Fools Fall in Love, am I correct?
Yes, he did.
Did you ever perform that song with Frankie?
No, when we were on the show with him, of course he did it.
Well, we're going to talk about Little Darlin' right now. The writer of the song, Maurice Williams. And in fact, Maurice Williams recorded the song with his group called the Gladiolas. Now, Maurice Williams eventually, I believe, renamed the group the Zodiacs.
Yes, that's who he travels with at the moment.
And it was basically the same group. The Gladiolas became the Zodiacs, right?
Yeah, but on February the 4th, 1957, when we first heard the song, our manager called him at home in North Carolina and asked him if he would mind if we recorded his song. And he said he'd be thrilled if we recorded his song. And so on that premise and with his permission, we went ahead and did it.
You remember the exact date?
Yeah.
February 4th.
Yes.
1957.
Well, we recorded the song on the 5th. We had a four-song session scheduled at 12 o'clock midnight, and we had perfunctorily learned Little Darlin' in the afternoon, and we forgot all about it.
Mm-hmm.
And we recorded the four songs, which were all original tunes, by the way, because we were feeling a little sensitive about having been called a cover group. And then the producer released the musicians, and it was about 3:45 in the morning. And then he said, oh, that song, Little Darlin', from this afternoon. We went, oh, yeah. So we pulled out our notes that we had made earlier in the day, and he said, we won't have to pay the musicians for another hour if you can relearn this and record it in the next 15 minutes.
That's a quick learn.
So the pressure was on. So we spent about 7 or 8 minutes learning the song, and then we had a little run-through halfway through. I changed the key. I lifted it a half a tone. The drummer had already gone to his car, so there are no drums on Little Darlin'. We did one take, starting at about 4:05, and we were finished on time.
With all due respect to your drummer, nobody noticed that there was no drums on that. I was not aware of it.
Well, it would totally have changed the character of it. We have percussion, of course. We have those castanets, and we have a cowbell.
Right.
And we have a wonderful guitar player and some great bass and the piano, but there are no drums.
I was listening to the Gladiolas version of the song, and what you did differently is the bass part is Bill Reed, but that was actually like not a bass part on the Gladiolas record. It was like a treble part. They did an upper key. They didn't do like My Darling, I Need You. So that was something that was original that you did.
Yes.
We know who did the lead singing on Little Darlin'. It was you.
Yes.
Who did the la 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 la?
Oh, that was Ted Kowalski, our tenor.
Oh, okay. Did I do that pretty good, by the way?
Yeah, very, very nice. Very nice job on that, Ronnie.
I am available. So the members on Little Darlin', before we play it right now, I want to let you know, Dave Somerville doing the lead singing, Ted Kowalski doing the tenor,
yes.
Phil Levitt doing baritone, and the late Bill Reed doing bass. He passed away a couple of years ago, was it?
Irresistible Bill Reed, yes.
Irresistible Bill Reed.
Fabulous, fabulous bass singer.
An incredible recording, and it got to number 2 on the chart. We're going to tell you why it only got to number 2 on the chart after we play it right now. These are the Diamonds and their legendary recording of Little Darlin'.
That's my lover.
Little Darlin. That's L-I-N apostrophe.
Yeah.
Okay. There's no G in Little Darling. That was the Diamonds. Okay, now, who was the villain? Who kept you out of the number one spot?
It was that dang Elvis. All shook up.
Dang Elvis.
I'll tell you what. Well, we were certainly big, big fans of Elvis, and if you're going to be kept out of the number one spot by anybody, of course, it was great to be next to the king. We were certainly huge fans of his, and apparently he liked us as well. I've had a few people tell me that we were his favorite group, and he learned Little Darlin' himself, and for the last few years of his career, he included late in his show, like three or four from the end, and I've heard several in-person recordings to testify to that. He included Little Darlin'.
You forgave him for... keeping you from having a number one
of
record that song.
And All Shook Up became the biggest selling recording in 1957. And the third biggest selling recording of 57 was Little Darlin'.
What was number two?
Number two was Love Letters in the Sand by Pat Boone.
The White Bucks guy. There's one other interesting thing to mention about Little Darlin', and it has to do with soldiers that were in Vietnam.
Yes. I've been told by five returned Vietnam vets that when the guys were over there fighting in the middle and late 60s, those who were in the jungle used to signal each other. They would climb into the trees at night to get away from the shooters and the animals on the ground that might do them harm. And when a soldier would get into a tree, he would sing that la, 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 part of Little Darlin' as a password to anybody within earshot. And if you were a soldier in another tree nearby and you thought maybe you'd rustled a little bit and you didn't want to get shot at, you'd sing it back quickly, you know.
La, 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 la.
But if you sang yours and the answer came back, take your best shot. That's the way the story was told to me.
How did they know it was really other soldiers and it wasn't you guys performing?
There you go. Because there were no castanets.
Oh, that's right. The they were listening for the castanets and the piano.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
The gliss. A lot of people thought that was a harp.
I was,
but it was a gliss in the key of G-flat.
Yeah, the full word is glissando, I think. Gliss is for short. Yeah, that's just a very unusual on a rock and roll record. Now, you did a recording of a song called Words of Love, which got to number 13 on the chart. And the song was written by Buddy Holly, and he originally recorded it. Was this a Buddy Holly single? Did you cover this one? Or
no, we didn't cover it. It was presented to us by the publisher, and it was Buddy's first hit as a songwriter.
How you feel? Tell me, love is real. Words of love, whisper, hot and true. Darling, I love you.
Of Love, and that was by the Diamonds, great Buddy Holly song. I'm Ronnie Allen talking to the lead singer of the Diamonds, namely Dave Somerville. And we're going to move to a song right now, which describes what the score of a baseball game is before they actually throw out the first pitch. Zip, zip. And he didn't know I was going to say that. That should be obvious.
That's very cute.
I don't know the background of Zip Zip. Was that recorded by somebody else first?
No, it wasn't. It was written specially for us by Barry Kay. He was a disc jockey in Pittsburgh.
Zip Zip was actually the first recording which was written especially for your group.
That's correct.
Okay, we're going to listen to it right now. And by the way, we should credit a gentleman by the name of David Carroll, who had the orchestra for all of these wonderful recordings.
David Carroll, who is still with us, by the way.
Great.
He's in his 90s. He lives in Los Angeles, about 5 minutes from where I live. And I talk to him from time to time. For many years, he worked for the Smothers Brothers and was responsible for most of the musical direction and orchestras on the Crew Cuts records.
This was actually top 40 hit number 8, believe it or not, for the Diamonds. This one got to number 16 on the chart. Zip Zip.
I got a gal, and she's real hip. And every time I see her, I just flip. I love her, and she loves me, and she loves it. The gal you see, she's a ball full of fun. She's just loved by everyone. Zip, zip. Oh, she's my zip, zip. Girl, she makes me flip, flip. She makes me flip, flip. Girl, she's my zip, zip. Oh, she's my zip, zip. Girl, she makes me flip, flip. She makes me flip, flip. Girl, she's my zip, zip. She makes me flip, flip. Oh, zip, 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 zip. Now I got eyes, they're good to me. Now she's the only girl that I see.
I'm her ever-loving man. She calls me her daffodil. When she has that zip zip flow, I open up from head to toe.
Zip zip, oh she's my zip zip girl. She makes me flip flip.
Flip, flip.
She makes me flip flip. Oh she's my zip zip. Oh she's my zip zip girl. She makes me flip flip.
Flip, flip.
She makes me flip flip. Oh she's my zip zip. She makes me flip flip. Oh zip 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 zip. Oh. She makes me flip flip. She makes me flip flip. Oh, she's my zip zip. She makes me flip flip. She makes me flip flip. Oh, she's my zip zip. She makes me flip flip. Oh, zip 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 zip. Oh, she's my zip zip.
The Diamonds and Zip Zip. We're going to go to the Stroll now. Come, Let's Stroll. This is a song, I'm not sure if it was written for you, but it was written by Clyde Otis.
Well, it was written specially for us because in a conversation with Dick Clark in December of 1957, he mentioned that the kids were doing a line dance called The Stroll to Chuck Willis's recording of C.C. Rider. There was no song called The Stroll, and of course it's easy to take a hint from somebody like Uncle Dick, so we asked Clyde Otis, who was a fledgling songwriter at that time, if he would create a song for us with that title. And within a week, we had that song in the can. We flew Fats Domino's band up from New Orleans to Bell Studio in New York, and we added King Curtis on saxophone.
Oh, Curtis, yes.
Ray Charles singers who backed Perry Como on his show.
They were on that one, too. You had everybody but the kitchen sink.
I'm telling you, you can't hear much of those Ray Charles singers, but they're there. And that became our second. Actually, in order of release, I think it became our third million seller.
The Stroll got to number 4 in Billboard, but got to number 1 in Cashbox.
Number 1 in Cashbox, that's right.
We're going to take a listen to it right now, and then I'm going to tell you about a little memory I have about you performing that on the Dick Clark Show. These are the Diamonds and their huge hit called The Stroll.
Across the floor.
Okay, Dave, I got to confess, I used to watch Bandstand every day.
Yeah.
And I saw you perform the Straw. At one point, I seem to recall Dick Clark asking you guys or asking one of you if you knew how to do the Straw, and you kind of confessed that you really were not expert in doing the Straw.
Well, we actually did it on Patty Page's show on another occasion.
Is my recollection correct that you actually said, well, we really don't do it that good or something like that?
Yeah, you're probably right. I've brought tears to the eyes of choreographers myself in spite of 6 years of dancing lessons. The longest surviving line dance in the history of the music industry, by the way.
Wow. Never thought of it that way. But that's true.
You won't ever be able to think of it otherwise.
People are still strolling. We are going to move to a song right now from the year 1958, and this song was a complete change of pace for you. You did the title song from a motion picture that, if I recall correctly, starred Patty McCormick.
That's right.
Now, she was a naughty little girl in The Bad Seed. I remember that.
Yeah.
And then she was kind of a precocious little girl in Cathy-O?
Yes.
To me, you guys sounded like the Ames Brothers on this record.
Well, you know, we started before rock and roll, and the groups that we idolized were Golden Gate Quartet, the Mills Brothers, the Ames Brothers, the Four Freshmen. And so Cathy-O was kind of a reversion to just doing songs in the way that we thought they needed to be done.
Isn't that a beautiful song, folks? By a show of hands. Thousands of hands out there. They're all, they want you to do it again, but hey, buy the CD. There's a CD called The Diamonds featuring Dave Somerville, 21 Carats, and that's not C-A-R-R-O-T-S, it's C-A-R-A-T-S.
There you go.
Quite a difference there. And are both of these CDs, that one and the one of the bus, were you the bus driver, are they all available on your website?
Yes, both of those are available.
We're going to talk about that a little bit later on. But right now, we're going to go to Walking Along.
Yes.
And this was recorded by a bunch of cards, the Solitaires, back in 1957.
Right.
And you got around to doing it in 1958, at the end of 1958. So this was technically a remake, and it wasn't a cover. Generally, a cover means that the other one just came out, and you're doing it like a week or two later.
Right.
If this came out a year later, it's a remake.
Yeah.
When you heard Walking Along by the Solitaires, did you like it when it was presented to you?
Yes, I thought it was a good song. And we did it on the same session as The Stroll, by the way. So, again, it was Fats Domino's band accompanying us.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
The Diamonds and Walking Along. I am Ronnie Allen, and we are moving right along. We are strolling down memory lane. I'm allowed to say that.
I get it.
I am often told that I am very obvious.
Is that your talent?
That's one of my talents. And I could count all five of them on my fingers here.
Walking Along, by the way, is one of my favorite Diamonds records. I think it came off particularly well. It was certainly fun to sing, and they had microphones down at our feet, you know, for the walking part.
Oh, is that how you did it?
Yeah.
And, of course, you're aware that was Mercury 71366.
Is that the number?
Sure. We are going to move to, how can I describe this next one? She say, doobie doom. Now, when I think of this record, I think of this poor henpecked guy. And whatever the wife says, the guy does. She say, so he does.
We recorded that during an afternoon, again at Bell Sound, and all the bottom parts were recorded, you know, she say, doobie doom, doobie doom. And then while we were having dinner afterwards with the manager,
yeah.
I said, you know, I keep hearing in my mind, since we've left the studio, a kind of a little bird part, a little falsetto on top. And he said, well, let me call the studio and see if they have some time. So the manager and I went back to the studio. And because we now had the luxury of adding another track, we'd gone from monaural to stereo only recently before this recording, as far as technological possibilities were concerned. And they rolled it, and I just... I sang that to...
You mean that wasn't originally in the record?
No. It wasn't something that Barry Mann wrote. It's something that I ad-libbed on
okay.
a take or two.
Now, you just brought up the name Barry Mann, and Barry Mann, the same guy that wrote She Say Doobie Doom, actually it was a co-write, Barry Mann and Mike Anthony wrote
mm-hmm.
She Say. And of course, a couple of years later, Barry Mann was inquiring about who put the bump in the bump, bump, bump.
But yeah, and of course, his biggest success of all time would be You've Lost That Love and Feeling,
so
which
what?
Is the most played record in the history of American radio.
Was She Say his first hit record?
Yes.
It is about a henpecked guy.
No, I've never gotten too deeply into the lyric.
She say, doobie doom. Got to number 18 on the chart. These are the Diamonds.
She say,
Dave, you admitted an amazing thing here. You said that you actually sang the song, but you really never thought of what you were singing.
I regard that song as a sound effect.
But sometime you ought to listen to the recording, and you ought to listen to what words you were singing there.
I mean,
they may make you cringe.
Can I listen to the CD that you're going to send me after you edit it?
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I'm going to make sure that there's no edit on that song. The whole song. But you can hear every she say and every doobie doo. I'm going to play a song right now that is very short, so listen very, very carefully or you might miss it, folks. It's called The 22nd Day, and it's a co-write. It's you and Goodman. What's Goodman's first name?
Nat Goodman was our manager, okay. And he had this awful habit of putting his name on things that he had nothing to do with.
Oh, okay. So you're saying it's just you, really?
Yeah.
I wrote this? Okay.
So it's actually a traditional song to which I wrote a different lyric.
We're going to listen to it right now. It's very quick, so listen carefully. These are the Diamonds and the 22nd Day.
I went to the fortune teller to find out for my fate. I said, young man, you'd better be patient, or you got some time to wait. Tell me when she's gonna be my own.
You're mad about the
last mother of the year. Tell me when she's gonna be my own.
You're mad about the
last mother of the year. Tell me when she's gonna be my own.
You're mad about the
last mother of the year. Well, will it be January?
No, no.
February?
No, no.
March, April,
no, no.
May, June, July, August, September, October, November.
On the 22nd day of December.
About the last mother of the year. Will it be January?
No, no.
February?
No, no.
March,
no.
April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November.
About the 22nd day of December.
About the last month of the year. I went to the fortune teller to find out what my fate. He said, young man, you'd better be patient, for you got some time to waste.
The 22nd day. By the Diamonds. You sent me the CD, which is called 21 Carats, and includes 16 hits and 5 extra ones, and this one is extra. This never became a hit, but it's very different from your other recordings, so I decided I'd like to include it in the show.
Great.
Batman, Wolfman, Frankenstein, or Dracula. What is this, a multiple choice quiz? You pick your favorite? Is that what this is about? Interesting title. Anything you want to tell me about this before I play it?
You know, I can barely remember recording this song.
With all those monsters and
all those monsters didn't scare me. It didn't scare me in remembering their names.
And this was really a Diamonds record. They didn't just put. We'll
say no. We actually recorded.
Take my baby to a movie show so I can try to suit her while the lights are low. But she won't curdle to a story of romance. There's only one way I've got a chance. It takes a Batman, Wolfman, Frankenstein, or Dracula to put her in the mood for love. It takes a cat, girl, dog, boy, creature from the Black Lagoon to make her feel like making love. It takes a monster from outer space to make my baby want my embrace. And when I hold her, she's like a dream. If only she can hear somebody scream. Parking down in Lover's Lane, and lots of moonlight doesn't drive this girl insane. She thinks that dreamy music really is a bore, but I found out what she's looking for. It takes a Batman, Wolfman, Frankenstein, or Dracula to make her tender as can be. It takes a cat, girl, dog, boy, creature from the Black Lagoon to get her making love with me. If there's a madman whose teeth are curled, who grows a bed bug that wrecks the world, she gets romantic. It's really quaint when all the other women start to faint.
You You've done a whole slew of voiceover commercials for various people, companies.
Yes, I was a voiceover artist for about 15 years, and I did some acting for a while. I studied with Leonard Nimoy. I actually had a guest appearance in the first season of Star Trek. I was Lieutenant Larry Matson. You know, it's amazing how things, after all these years, come up and bite you on the bottom. Stuff you've forgotten all about. A couple of months ago, a guy called me and said, I will give you $1,000 if you'll sign 667 of these cards with your picture on, with your Star Trek outfit.
Did you do it?
Yeah, of course. Very easy. You know, I watched television and I signed 667 autographs.
And after you did that, you said, I'll do another 667 for another $1,000.
Yeah.
Why not? Some people out there might have heard your voice on commercials for Mattel, Toyota, Motown Records, The Fall Guy, Ford, Carlo Rossi Wine, Magnum PI, and the International House of Pancakes. You do have a website, which is a Diamond Dave website, and I believe the address is www.diamonddave.tv.
That's right.
DIAMONDDAVE.TV. That tells a lot about you, and does that tell how people can get the albums?
Yeah, the bus CD is there, and there's a Diamonds Hits CD.
Where are you working now, Dave?
Good question. Thanks, Ronnie.
You're doing this interview with me. That's work?
Yes, right. I'm working at Dick Clark's American Bandstand Theater in Branson, Missouri for the next 9 months, actually, doing six shows a week. Dark on Mondays, I'm doing the first half of the afternoon show with McKenna Medley, Bill Medley's beautiful daughter, who just sings incredibly well, very, very moving. Second half of the show is Bill Haley's original Comets.
Dave, I cannot thank you enough for spending the time with us on this last record we're going to play, One Summer Night, which was the last recording that ever made the top 40 for your group.
Yes.
John Felton replaced...
He replaced Bill Reed. And actually, Evan Fisher replaced Ted Kowalski as the tenor, and Mike Douglas replaced Phil Levitt.
And sadly, John Felton was killed in a plane crash.
That's right.
A few years later.
Yes.
This is a song that originally was done by a group called the Dan Lears, One Summer Night. Good night, Dave.
Thank you, Ronnie. You asked great questions. Thank you very much for keeping this music alive.
One summer night.
No, no, no.
We fell in love. One summer night. I held you tight. You and I. Under the moon.
The show. And now, two bonus tracks by the Diamonds. both of which made the top 40. Leading off with their vocal version of a song that was an instrumental hit by its composer, piano player Eddie Heywood. This is Soft Summer Breeze.
Soft summer breeze, lazy old stream, cotton clouds up high. Boy and girl in love, hearts up to the sky, whispering trees add to the theme.
Finally, these are the Diamonds with a song called High Sign.
Give me the high, high sign.
Come on and wait on the line with a high, high sign. high, high side.